7 o'clock is the time. Keep it right here for your Legal Rights. This is KALW San Francisco, 91.7 FM.
Good evening. This is Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight on Your Legal Rights, we're talking bankruptcy, the view from 5,000 feet. With me on the phone tonight is Leon Bayer from the Los Angeles firm of Bayer, Wishman, and Liotta. Leon is a certified bankruptcy law specialist, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California, practices out of Los Angeles, California, and is a longtime supporter of Your Legal Rights. Mr. Bayer has been practicing bankruptcy since 1979. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the dialing area, and again, that means if you are calling us from outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free. That's 866-798-8255. Again, if you want us to pay the freight, call 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic, which tonight is bankruptcy or debtors' rights or collection practices or any of the above. You're not limited to the exact point where we may be in our conversation. Occasionally, I may forget to mention that while we're happy to answer all of your questions, we stop short of giving precise legal advice, as we don't have all the facts relating to a given case, nor could we in a short time that we're talking to one another, but we're more than happy to pass along the legal principles that can help guide you in your decision-making. So call in. And again, our number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Leon, let me welcome you back to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff. It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
It's always great to have you along. And I'd like to start here. Well, first, 16 months ago, you were good enough to walk us through a bankruptcy. 6 months later, we discussed debt collection practices, and especially problematic debt collection practices. And to those of you that are listening in, both of these topics are still open to your calls. But for us tonight, I'd like to circle back and start with a really basic 5,000-foot view. And with that, Leon, can you give us a quick summary of just what bankruptcy is?
Sure. Bankruptcy is a law. It's derived from the United States Constitution. I don't want to get too technical, but I know that we have a very intelligent audience, so maybe I can get into a few of the technicalities without boring people too much. The United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, enumerates the powers that Congress has over certain types of legislation, and one of the powers given to Congress is to legislate uniform bankruptcy laws so that we would have the same law of bankruptcy applicable in every state. The United States did not always have bankruptcy laws, even though the Constitution provided that power to Congress. There were times in early American history when Congress saw fit not to have any bankruptcy law. But the first permanent bankruptcy law that did not have an expiration date took effect in 1898. And ever since then, we have had a unitary bankruptcy law applicable in all states and territories of the United States. The Congress has established bankruptcy courts. Bankruptcy courts are courts of special jurisdiction, which hear only the issues that arise in a bankruptcy case. They don't hear wills, trusts, criminal cases, divorces, only bankruptcy. So this is a court system that has grown extremely sophisticated. The concept in bankruptcy is that the honest but unfortunate person deserves a break from ordinary types of debt if they can establish that the debt was made under honest, good faith circumstances, and through no fault of their own, they really just cannot afford to pay it back anytime in the foreseeable future. If a bankruptcy is granted, it's a term that we call a discharge. So if a bankruptcy discharge is granted, the debts that have been discharged in that bankruptcy case are gone forever.
So let me interrupt you for a moment. You mentioned about debt that was honestly acquired. So I guess I would assume there'd be some presumptions there. If I took a long trip around the world and bought fast cars, everything else, and then filed bankruptcy within a couple of weeks, it probably doesn't look like I really bought that stuff with any intention other than filing bankruptcy. And similarly, if I'd been struggling to make payments for years and finally just couldn't bear it anymore, they would probably treat it a little differently.
Exactly. Someone who goes out and just wantonly racks up debt. You go to Las Vegas, you charge up all your credit cards, you just have a wingding of a time, and on your way back from Vegas, you pull into my parking lot to file bankruptcy. I'm going to tell you that if we go ahead and we file the bankruptcy case now, you're going to have some explaining to do when we get to court, because it's going to look like you charged up that debt. You had no care or concern whatsoever about being able to pay any of it back. And if your conduct amounts to what the court determines to be fraudulent, then those debts would not be discharged in the bankruptcy. Or if the court determines that the filing of your case was done in bad faith, then the bankruptcy case can be dismissed by the court.
And actually, for those that are listening, there's actually a step worse than that. If they determine that things you have done vis-a-vis the bankruptcy were fraudulent, you could actually be prosecuted for bankruptcy fraud if you hide assets or things like that. So in any time you're dealing with your government, and certainly a bankruptcy, you have to be abundantly honest.
That's exactly right. And Jeff, I know you are a specialist in criminal law, and there are criminal codes, federal criminal codes, applicable to bankruptcy crimes. Lying or concealing assets in a bankruptcy case, very serious stuff. And there are not many people, not many people who get convicted of that are charged with it, because overwhelmingly, the people who file a bankruptcy actually are honest, and they file honest bankruptcy schedules. But there are some rogues out there, and the newsletters that we bankruptcy lawyers subscribe to, every week there's always a couple people somewhere in the country that are going away to the pokey for committing a serious bankruptcy crime.
I had the pleasure of watching one of those trials when I was clerking in a district court shortly after law school. It was a very interesting sight to behold. Overwhelmingly, people that are in bankruptcy are looking for relief. They're looking for help. They realize that their life is on kind of a thin thread already, and they're more than happy to be honest and accept the help because they really are looking for help. This person probably didn't fit that mold.
Well, those are the interesting cases to sit through. Most of the cases will pretty much, after you hear the first four or five of them, the rest of them are likely to put you to sleep because they're all pretty much the same. Credit cards, personal loans, medical bills, and that's pretty much the gamut of what you see in the typical bankruptcy case. There are actually several different forms of bankruptcy relief, and we call these the chapters of bankruptcy because they're derived from the chapter number of the bankruptcy code where those laws are enumerated. So what I've been talking about for the last few minutes is really a Chapter 7 bankruptcy.
Let me interrupt you there. In a moment, I'd like to circle back and talk about the various types of bankruptcy cases. But before I do, I'd like us to take this call from Nancy in Berkeley. Nancy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thank you. The reason I'm calling is about a year ago, I had been dealing with this consignment store in Oakland, and they filed for bankruptcy. It happened very quickly, and they owe me money, and I'm just wondering if I ever get that money back. I don't even know who to contact.
Okay. Well, Nancy, let me ask you a couple quick questions, then I think I can take us to what you need to know.
Sure.
Did you receive a bankruptcy notice from the court?
No.
How do you know they filed bankruptcy?
Oh, because I went in, the last time I was in there, they said that they were closing and filing bankruptcy.
Okay. Your problem is a very interesting one, because when it comes to merchandise held in a retail store for sale on consignment, the law generally categorizes the inventory of the store, all those consigned goods, they're generally considered to be assets of the bankruptcy estate. And you would have no special right to get your own things back.
Well, it wasn't my clothing. It was, they sold my clothing and they owed me cash.
I see. Okay. If a bankruptcy case, well, when a bankruptcy case gets filed, the person who files the bankruptcy is required to list all of their debts. And that's so that you have the opportunity to participate in the bankruptcy case if you have certain rights and remedies, and also to allow the orderly distribution of any assets that come into possession of the court system that can be made available to pay something to creditors. An interesting thing in your case is a debt that is not listed in the bankruptcy case is typically considered to have been discharged anyway in the bankruptcy, unless you can establish that the debt was incurred fraudulently. So for you to go anywhere with this, sadly, I have to tell you that unless you have convincing evidence that they took your goods in, they sold them, and they never intended to pay you, you have nowhere to go.
Okay. So I'm all out the money.
What you might want to do is check with the bankruptcy court in the district where that store was located, to see if a bankruptcy actually had been filed. Maybe there's something you could do on your taxes to maybe claim some kind of a deduction or something.
Mm-hmm.
That would be something to talk with your tax preparer about.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy, was it a single store or was it part of a chain?
No, it was a single store.
Do you know who owned the store?
I mean, I know, but I don't have their names.
If the person that owned the store was an individual who held it in his own name, it wasn't any kind of a corporation or a limited liability company.
No, he and his wife owned it, and she died, and then he immediately closed the store and said he was declaring bankruptcy.
Yeah, sometimes people will say that to you, but they never follow through and actually file the case.
Ah.
So if you can dredge up the person's name, maybe do a little research with the City Business License Bureau or something.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Might be worth a small claims court lawsuit.
Okay. Well, they didn't owe me much. They only owed me $20, so.
Well, okay. Well, even so, it's agonizing to encounter a breach of faith like that.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It's probably more that breach of your trust than it was the money. $20 isn't a big deal, but knowing that somebody may have taken advantage is somewhat frustrating.
Yeah, well, it happened very quickly. I mean, like within a week.
Well, on the other hand, the wife died, so I guess she got her just desserts, right?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
Anyways, thank you.
Nancy, okay, thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, Leon, we were talking about that bankruptcy fraud case, and you were talking about a bankruptcy and how people kind of get put to sleep going through some of the details. And this fraud case was not a whole lot different. The jury was really, to say they were riveted is kind of the opposite They were barely able to keep their eyes open. And all of a sudden, one day, all of the prosecutors in the office were all lined up in the back of the room to watch. So you know there's a show that's about to be taking place. And with this guy on the stand, the prosecutor confronts him with a document that he'd put in evidence on as to the disposition of some of the property, and showed an earlier version of that same document collected from his garbage before it was altered. And only even then, after showing that he had office equipment that wasn't too common in those days, he had his own scanners and printers and things at home, and they showed how he manufactured the evidence. And every juror was suddenly paying, just to say they were riveted is an understatement. Every single one of them was sitting up in their chairs, taking copious notes. And when the jurors began to rock in their chairs, I knew. Happily, I wasn't a defense attorney at that time, and I certainly wasn't his attorney. But let's talk a little bit about the various types of bankruptcy cases.
Okay. Well, we've talked some about at least a little introduction into Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and that's the kind most people file because with a little bit of effort and a very simple court hearing and a lot of paperwork, you can get rid of most kinds of debts. There are other types of bankruptcy, which are the reorganization cases. There is, I'm sure all your listeners have heard the term Chapter 11. This is what companies file, corporations, limited partnerships, things like that, business entities of that nature. They file a Chapter 11, and it puts all creditors on hold, and it gives the debtor the ability to present a reorganization plan. The rules are very complex, and it requires a great deal of court time. Individual persons like Jeff and myself, we are eligible to file a Chapter 7, a Chapter 11 case if we want to, but most Chapter 11s are not filed by individuals. It's mostly larger business entities. But there is a type of reorganization in bankruptcy that does attract a lot of individuals for a reorganization, and that's Chapter 13 bankruptcy. Chapter 13 gets its name because it's the 13th chapter of the Federal Bankruptcy Code. Chapter 13 allows an individual to reorganize debts, such as, a typical Chapter 13 case is going to be for someone who is behind on mortgage payments and perhaps facing foreclosure of their home. Chapter 13 will freeze a foreclosure, and it will give you up to 5 years to gradually pay back and catch up all the payments that you had previously missed. So it's a marvelous remedy, and other uses of Chapter 13 are to manage debts that are not managed under Chapter 7. What am I talking about here? Well, frequently, tax debts don't get managed under a Chapter 7, although occasionally they do, and we'll come back to that later. Student loans don't get discharged in a Chapter 7. They don't get discharged in Chapter 13 either, but the debt can be managed, where you pay what you could afford maybe for the next 5 years.
And actually, to that end, we are planning a program here in April where the entire show will be dedicated to bankruptcy and your student loans. So stay tuned.
Yeah, that'll be a marvelous program, and anybody with student loans ought to listen in then, because one of the most frequent phone calls we get at my law office, which handles only bankruptcy cases, is people looking for some way to manage or get rid of their student loans. It's a huge problem, and it's an underserved problem. So that program coming up in April is something people should put on their calendar.
Isn't that one of the things Elizabeth Warren was saying? She wants to make student loans dischargeable in bankruptcy?
Yes. Student loans actually used to be dischargeable in bankruptcy. The bankruptcy laws went through a major renovation in 1979, And the bankruptcy code at that time did allow for the discharge of student loans, provided that you had made a good faith effort to pay and that the debt had been due and owing for at least 5 years. So they didn't want people to take their diploma at graduation and walk down the street to the courthouse and file bankruptcy. You had to give it at least 5 good years of repayment efforts. It didn't really even mean you had to have ever made a payment. It just means that you had tried in good faith to pay. So if you had taken advantage of deferments and forbearance agreements, that was okay. That showed a good intent to pay. But over the years, those student loan dischargeability laws were tightened up from 5 years. It then became 7 years. You had to wait. And then it was eliminated entirely unless you go through a very complex type of bankruptcy litigation in which you sue your student loan lender seeking a court judgment that the repayment of the debt would be an undue hardship on you or any of your dependents. Now, everybody who's got a student loan probably feels like it's an undue hardship because it means there's something else that you would like to spend your student loan payments on, but you can't because you have to pay your student loan.
And I deserve a Bentley.
Well, Jeffrey, I know Jeffrey very well, and I can tell the audience Jeff does deserve a Bentley.
That doesn't mean I drive one.
And don't hit one either.
Or so, I will be filing bankruptcy.
Yes. So with student loans and dischargeability, it's a very complicated procedure, and the fact that it keeps you from spending money on things that you consider a necessity doesn't mean the court would see it that way. Most cases where a person is successful in gaining a hardship discharge of student loans will involve individuals who suffer from a very serious permanent disability which impairs their ability to make a meaningful livelihood. And there are efforts, like from Senator Warren, to liberalize these laws. I think they should be liberalized. I think the bankruptcy court system is the excellent idea place to determine who should be entitled to relief on their student loans.
There may be another check and play at times. I remember there was a rumor, and I have no idea if there's any truth to this, but there was a rumor about the time I graduated law school about two students, and nobody knew where it was, that had completed law school. They had deferred all of their loans, went to law school. They may have gone for an MBA school afterwards, but they waited until they passed the bar. They had just gone over the threshold, and they immediately filed bankruptcy to wipe out all their loans. And, of course, they qualified for the bankruptcy, but the bar didn't quite see it that way, and they were suspended for a while.
Yeah. There is, I can tell you that today, there is no impediment to a lawyer who files personal bankruptcy and having a bar license, being admitted to the bar and being a licensed attorney. I suspect that they may, in those instances, and I have seen some instances like that. In fact, I've litigated them. I used to sometimes represent student loan lenders in those kinds of cases. And we did come up against a number of lawyers who had filed bankruptcy and were suing to obtain a discharge of their student loans. They were always unsuccessful, but there was nothing immoral or unethical about their effort to discharge the student loans, and there was no impact on their law licenses.
So we were talking about the different types of bankruptcy. I kind of jumped in when we were talking about Chapter 13.
Yes. So Chapter 13 is really a marvelous remedy because imagine this. You might have a foreclosure sale coming up on your home in a couple of days. Maybe you've missed a year's worth of payments. You were out of work or suffered an illness and couldn't work. You're behind on your payments. The filing of a Chapter 13 case stops the foreclosure, and it can give you, as I said, up to 5 years to catch up your loan and come current. That is usually the most common use of a Chapter 13 case. Another is for people who maybe earn too much money to be allowed to file the Chapter 7 bankruptcy. There are some pretty strict rules about that. If you have an above-average income, it is possible that you might be excluded and prevented from filing Chapter 7. But sometimes we can get pretty much the same relief for you under a Chapter 13. I think the takeaway from all of this is you really need a good, very good, very experienced bankruptcy lawyer, especially on the more challenging cases. Your money is well spent getting the best bankruptcy lawyer you can afford.
There's a bit more. There's a lot more I want to get into. We have a call working its way through. I have a lot of questions about how this works and how you go about filing a bankruptcy case. And of course, the obvious question we have is: so you really need a bankruptcy, but you're flat broke. How do you pay for that lawyer? And much, much more. Ralph in San Francisco, we're going to be with you in just a moment. For the rest of our listening, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, where tonight we're talking bankruptcy, the view from 5,000 feet with Leon Baer. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, call us on our nickel at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. It won't cost you a dime. And as always, you can call regarding any question related to tonight's topic. We're talking bankruptcy, collections, debtors' rights, consumer bankruptcy. You're not limited to the exact point we are in our conversation. You're not alone. Feel free to call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. You know, the last thing that we want to do is to give you an additional cost, contribute to your debt. So call us toll-free on us at 866-798-8255. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. You can call 415-989-1616 or you can visit sfbar.org for more information.
Let me turn it over to Ralph in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff. Leon, the questions I have relate to Chapter 13. How many people in the 2008-2009 recession used or availed themselves of Chapter 13? Do you know?
Don't know specifically. I can give you an educated guess that each one of those years there may have been in the United States, maybe 100,000 people per year filing a 13 case.
So is it because they found a lawyer that was smart enough to do it, or they just walked away from their homes?
Well, a lot of them, unfortunately, found lawyers who were not smart enough to do it. And I see a great deal of bankruptcy malpractice happening.
You do?
Yeah. Back in those years, you know, that was the height of the recession, and
right,
particularly in California, it was pretty much all about real estate, and there were many there were more foreclosures during that group of years than I had ever seen previously in my long career.
I understand it was 8 million over the country.
In those years, in that group of years, yes, there were, I think it hit a high maybe in 2008 or 2007 where something more than 1 million bankruptcy cases were filed in each of those years. Mm-hmm. Again, many of them were Chapter 13s. A lot of them don't work out. The sad truth is that many people will file a Chapter 13. They're trying to hang on to their real estate. They want to pay for it, but they don't have the ability to pay for it. It's one thing to file the case, but as soon as you file, you got to start making payments.
Well, that was my other question. My other question is, what happens to the interest? No, you're not paying. I assume you're not paying your full amount on the mortgage. So you're building. You've got this disparity. What happens to the interest on that? Is it compounded?
In most cases, you are paying the full amount that you owe on your mortgage. You know, you're not taking a 30-year mortgage and paying it off in 5 years. What you're doing is you are resuming the normal monthly mortgage payment and paying something extra to catch up the arrearages. And the courts generally require that in addition to paying those arrearages, you also have to pay interest on them because it's usually required into your promissory note. So if your promissory note requires you to pay interest on outstanding balances, then the court will honor that. And let's say your interest rate is 4% on your mortgage, then, yeah, you pay back the back payments in installments spread out over 5 years, but also with 4% interest for the time it takes you to do it.
On top of what you already... the interest you're already paying on the loan to begin with, right?
Well, you're paying interest in order to rent money.
Yeah.
You rent a car, and you rent it for a week, but you keep it for 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Are you telling me you only have to pay back for 1 week?
No, I'm not telling you that at all.
Money works the same. You are renting money. When you borrow money, you're renting it, and you're paying rent for it.
So doesn't that make that prohibitive, though? I mean, to file a Chapter 13 to keep your home, and then you'll be stocked with these additional interest payments?
Ralph, I think what we're talking about here is if you're six months behind.
Ralph, but it's what you agreed to.
I understand.
It's what you agreed to. And the one thing that really helps you is the fact that you also agreed that if you get behind on your payments, they can take your property. The filing of the Chapter 13 will stop that taking of the property, okay? But it's not going to do everything for you.
I got it.
You know, you got to pay what you've agreed to pay. What the bankruptcy law is doing is giving you extra time that you did not have.
Ralph, if you're 6 months behind in your payments, you're looking at no... you just don't see any way you're going to get caught up. Your property's in jeopardy. Things just aren't going your way. What this does is they'll take that 6 months behind and say, we're setting that aside. You'll pay that in small amounts over 5 years, up to 5 years, maybe with a little interest. But you just pick up like nothing was wrong and add a little bit to it so you can get caught up again. It lets you go back to where you should have been over a period of time.
And if you agreed to pay rent on the money, 4% interest, 5%, whatever it is, well, that's what you got to pay.
I know you guys don't want to get into this, but a lot of people were talked into these, I don't know what they call them, the balloon payments. So you pay the interest for 5 years, and then you have to pay the what you owe plus whatever, right? And a lot of people, when they reached that point, couldn't go any further. So, but now you're saying that they have to pay everything they owe. They can't prove that they got talked into a ridiculous loan.
Well, you know what? Every person who has mental capacity is given the right in the United States to enter into contracts. And unless you want Big Brother to stand next to you every time you're about to sign something and keep you from doing something foolish, then you are going to face the consequences of what you contracted for. You borrow money, and you know it's all due in 5 years. That's the deal. If that's not what you want, don't do it.
Remember, Ralph, if it sounds too good to be true,
yes,
don't listen to the people talking you into it.
I'm aware, Jeff. I think you guys have answered my question. Thank you so much.
Ralph, thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Let me turn to M in Oakland. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Good evening. Thank you for your help this evening. I wanted to just go back to a comment. There was a woman who spoke about 15 minutes ago seeking some help with a $20 debt that she would like to be repaid. Thank you for answering her question. But what was very off-putting and surprising, Jeff, you as a wonderful host did not catch, is that your guest made a comment about the deceased person saying that maybe she got what she deserved. Either way, it was a distasteful comment and very inappropriate to make after someone's not only personal loss, but financial loss, and to make light of it in such a way. I really hope that you, as a host, you know, take these matters seriously and hold your guests accountable, along with yourself, when comments such as those and others are made.
Well, Em, I can tell you, Jeff takes it very seriously. I do this day in and day out, and like most professions, medical, whatever, we do develop a sense of gallows humor. And I'm sorry it offends you, but I don't feel bad about having said it. And I'm not going to be hectored by you into apologizing for it.
And I knew that's exactly what you were going to say. And along with colleagues and hundreds of other people who have recorded this station, it also leaves a really negative mark. So thank you, Jeff, for your due diligence. And Jeff, thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you, Em. Thank you for joining us. And again, we apologize if it offended. Nobody who said it or heard it, really, it was not intended to offend. May have been intended at levity, but sorry that it offended. Where we left off, Leon, was we were talking a bit about the different types of bankruptcies. We talked about some of the benefits of the different types of bankruptcies. Before we leave that area, and I think we're going to have to move on pretty quickly because we got a lot of material, but we've seen lots of businesses where Chapter 11, a business is trying to reorganize, and it just doesn't work out, and they end up converting it to a Chapter 7, and those businesses are gone. Does the same thing happen with individuals on a Chapter 13?
Yeah, it does many times because, unfortunately, many of the misfortunes that cause a person to have the financial problems that they've encountered, a lot of times those problems don't go away. Someone who is habitually unemployed, they manage to work 3-4 months of the year, then they're unemployed again for 3 or 4 months. Someone in that kind of situation is probably just not going to have the wherewithal to make the steady stream of monthly payments that is required in a Chapter 13 case. And those cases will either get dismissed for failure to pay, or they may get converted to a Chapter 7 with the person giving up the property in a foreclosure, but maybe discharging the credit card debt and other financial obligations that they had.
This is like the situation Ralph described.
Because you file a Chapter 13 and you're in a payment plan doesn't mean you have to pay all your debts in full. So this kind of gets us back to, I think, what the caller Ralph was trying to get at, and that is, in the typical Chapter 13 case, it's not going to let you wipe out any part of what you owe on your home, but it may allow you to wipe out your credit card debts and personal loans and things of that nature. And in fact, there are some instances in which it is possible to reduce the amount of what you owe on a home. It's more common when homes are underwater, when there's more money owed on the mortgage than the current value of the property. These days, with soaring real estate values, it's very rare to see a Chapter 13 where the property owner is permitted to eliminate part of their mortgage. But there are provisions, depending on the economic circumstance.
You know, one thing you touched on a while ago is the need to hire a good bankruptcy lawyer. But this brings up the point, you really need a bankruptcy, but you're flat broke. How do you pay for this?
Are we talking about you, Jeff, or the average person?
We're not talking about me.
Okay.
I've always been a hair trigger away, but not quite there.
Okay. Well, hope never to see you in my waiting room. In terms of paying for a bankruptcy lawyer, yeah, it is a hardship, but let me give you some advice on that. Almost all bankruptcy lawyers will give you a completely free consultation. So if you're worried about your situation, you would like to have legal advice, there is absolutely no reason why you can't get the advice. And like as I said, almost all bankruptcy lawyers are going to provide you with a free consultation. Bankruptcy attorney fees do vary. One lawyer, in an office suite may charge X amount of dollars, and the lawyer in the next door suite may charge two times X. You are a consumer when you are shopping for a bankruptcy lawyer, and to be a smart consumer, you should talk to more than one lawyer, particularly if you have a challenging or a difficult case. A number of different points of view and opinions are really necessary for you to make sense out of your situation and find the right solution. And lawyer fees vary a great deal from one lawyer to the next, just as people's personalities will vary. So don't be afraid to do that. There's no master list kept anywhere that tells us that you've already seen two or three lawyers before you call me. If you're not satisfied or you didn't find the right solution with the first couple lawyers, keep going. Call some others. And something to keep in mind is that if you are struggling with, let's say, credit card debts, you're still paying them, but it's a horrible struggle for you, your bankruptcy lawyer may say, okay, you're eligible, you're qualified, everything looks good, quit paying the credit cards. You could then give the lawyer a deposit towards the fee and get the balance paid off over the next couple of months. Most bankruptcy lawyers are used to that scenario and happy to work with you on that.
So in a moment, I want to go on to our next topic, which is who is eligible to file. But before I do, I'd like to give our callers a chance to call in. It may be the last time I make this announcement tonight. But you are listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, and tonight we're talking about bankruptcy, the view from 5,000 feet with Leon Baer. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, let us pay the freight, 866-798-8255. If you're even thinking about bankruptcy, call us toll-free, 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question regarding the bankruptcy, collections, debtors' rights. You're not limited to where we may be in our conversation. And again, if you're outside of the local dialing area, call us toll-free, 866-798-8255. Next week, we hope not to be discussing bankruptcy because we're going to be talking about what you need to do. You're starting up a new business. What kinds of things do you need to do? What kind of things do you need to establish? What kinds of policies, if any, do you need to buy? How do you deal with employees? We're here to help you get set up in your new business. That's next week on Your Legal Rights. But let's get back to the current time. And, Leon, who's eligible to file bankruptcy?
Okay. Chapter 13 bankruptcies, which we've been talking about quite a bit, can only be filed by real flesh and blood human beings. Corporations, partnerships, are not eligible to be debtors under Chapter 13. If they need reorganization proceedings, they would have to proceed under a Chapter 11. One of the great advantages to Chapter 13 for individuals is that the rules are streamlined very much compared to the complexity of a Chapter 11 case. Chapter 11 rules and the statutes were written to deal with the largest of possible corporate insolvencies, you know, like Sears Department Store, American Airlines. Well, you can imagine the rules for dealing with a case like that are very intricate. Chapter 13, as I said, is streamlined. So a lot of the paperwork has been eliminated. And that makes it certainly more affordable for a person. And if you are self-employed, a sole proprietor, you may also file a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. Chapter 13 has special rules that allow a person who is self-employed to operate their business and proceed under a reorganization of a Chapter 13. Chapter 7 is pretty much wide open unless you earn above average income. If your income is above average in the state where you live, then you have to submit to the court something kind of like a complicated tax return to establish whether or not your core living expenses are reasonable, necessary, and use up all of your disposable income. And unfortunately, the current bankruptcy law uses the same schedule of criteria on ability to pay as the IRS uses when it considers installment payment agreements and offers in compromise. So it can be a bit of a challenge. Fortunately, it doesn't seem to come up that often. Good lawyers have also learned some tricks, but there are some provisions in the law. They're very complex, but they may allow some individuals to get around this means testing burden. And that, in fact, is what we call it, is a means test. And that's the complex tax type of a schedule that I was just talking about. It's referred to as the bankruptcy means test. If you fail that means test, you are not allowed to proceed under Chapter 7. You might be able to proceed under a 13 and obtain very substantial debt relief under the 13 while paying back something, but you won't be allowed to do a Chapter 7.
Let me turn it over to Z in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And this is ancient history, but it is history that I would be interested in dispensing with. In another state, prior to moving to California, I had a small claims judgment against me because I sold some merchandise that I owned out of a store that was not selling the merchandise, and I sold it wholesale to a person who was affiliated with another employee. The owner got upset and took me to small claims court and won a judgment against me, and in lieu of cash payment, took a piece of merchandise that I also had in the store as payment. And at the time, I did not get a receipt from them, and they never discharged the completion of that payment. So the owner of the store closed the store. Subsequently, I have no idea how to get a hold of them or where they are. And while I might be able to reach the employee that took that merchandise on their behalf, the fact is I really have no way of, and now it's been, of course, many years, but, you know, I had no receipt, nor, because I had never had experience in this before, had I known that I was supposed to get some kind of a discharge of the payment that was owed to that person, and that I should have done some kind of, I mean, I didn't know that that was what was necessary to file something. And so I was wondering if you had any suggestions that I might be able to utilize to somehow remotely get the courts to recognize that the amount has been paid in full and that I don't owe this person or any person any money any longer.
Yeah. Z, how is this affecting you presently?
My conscience.
Okay. Is it
and my good name, my reputation. Honestly, it's not actually affecting
me
at this point.
What state was it?
It was Florida.
Okay. Florida, as all states, do have rules regarding how long a judgment will remain valid. I don't know what the rule. I don't know what the rule is in Florida, but I'm sure Florida does have a rule saying that after X number of years, the judgment will expire unless, for good cause, it's been renewed. I doubt that the judgment has been renewed. For example, California judgment is good for 10 years, and after that it expires unless the holder of the judgment has it renewed. So, that thing may be long gone and just lost in the mist of history.
Well, they wouldn't have renewed it simply because it's been paid, but they didn't discharge it.
Yeah. What came first? You satisfying the debt or them suing?
Them suing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, every state also has laws saying that the debt's been resolved, it's been satisfied in some way.
But I didn't get a receipt. So if they didn't tell the court that it's been satisfied, how would I identify the fact that...
Well, you could file a motion asking to have the judgment vacated or to have the clerk of the court enter a notice of full satisfaction. What you have as evidence is your own word. And the way that operates is you file a motion in court with your declaration and telling the court what you're asking for, signed by you under penalty of perjury, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And
can that be done remotely?
Has to be served on the other party. The other party,
yes,
if they know that that's been resolved, probably wouldn't oppose it, or they might even come out of the woodwork and voluntarily agree to file a satisfaction.
I have no idea where this person is anymore.
Yeah. Well, I guess, it's going to be one of those things then that just never going to be resolved.
That's unsatisfying.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, like Nancy from Burbank, who got stiffed out of the $20.
Yes, but that was something where someone owed her. This is something that I've paid.
Yeah.
And so I don't owe anyone anything, and that if it ever would appear, I would be very, very unhappy because it's been discharged.
Sure you would. But so far it hasn't appeared, and it hasn't hurt you. So...
Okay.
My advice
in other words,
is...
get over it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Leon, I've got lots more questions and lots more material, but lots of time we don't have. So I'd like to give you 3 or 4 minutes for anything you want to say in summary.
Okay. A lot of people feel ashamed or embarrassed to file bankruptcy, to go to a lawyer. And, you know, just because you go visit a lawyer to get some legal advice, it doesn't mean you're going to file a bankruptcy. It means you're getting educated on what you need to know. Your creditors all have lawyers and have legal advice. They know where things stand. But the typical consumer doesn't have that. And that's why I'm particularly proud of the fact that almost all bankruptcy lawyers will give a free consultation. A good way to search for a lawyer is on the internet. There are referral sites. I would suggest that when you look at a lawyer's website, think of it more in terms of the same as you would think of a Yellow Page advertisement in the phone book. And don't take everything as true about what the lawyer says is so great about themselves. Do a Google search on any lawyer that you would consider contacting and see what other past clients have to say about that lawyer. and just be a smart consumer about it. And again, go get the advice you need. It doesn't mean you're going to file bankruptcy. It means you're going to find out what your legal rights are, which, of course, is the name of this show.
There is that. You know, Leon, there is a lot of stuff that we wanted to be talking about tonight that we just didn't get to. We talked a bit about the history of bankruptcy and how it evolved and different types of bankruptcy cases and the presumptions that apply and who could file different types of bankruptcies and even how to get a lawyer. We didn't get into the nuts and bolts of how somebody files and how it all works. Seems like we have another show in the offing.
I think we do.
So I think we need to get that going. Is there anything you want to, if you could give like a 30-second synopsis on how to file a case?
Bankruptcy is an enormously valuable consumer legal remedy. The law is there not to help your creditors. It's there to help you with debts you can't pay because of some misfortune. And don't be embarrassed about it. You're going to have to go to a bankruptcy court hearing, but there's going to be about 20 cases that they handle every hour. And everybody else who's there is there for the same thing. So, you know, the shame, the stigma of bankruptcy is something that I think we've pretty much left behind in the last century. Don't suffer with debt problems. You probably have a way out. Most people who need a bankruptcy are eligible for the relief. Whether they want to seek it or not is up to them, but most people are eligible. And most people get to keep everything they own when they file bankruptcy, because the laws are very generous about letting you keep assets that we all need to make a fresh start in life.
And with that, there's never any shame in talking to your lawyer. It's completely confidential. You'd never have to hang your head in shame. And it may save you from a lot of pain. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights and KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. My guest tonight has been Leon Bayer, certified bankruptcy law specialist, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California. Mr. Bayer practices in Los Angeles, California, and is a phenomenal expert in bankruptcy who actually became a certified specialist in the very first exam ever given for certified specialty in bankruptcy. Leon, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me again.
We'll be back next week, where we'll be discussing opening a new business, all those things you need to do, all those things you need to know to start a new business. In 2 weeks, we'll be talking about our tips for filing your taxes in 2020. Again, our thanks to you for listening, for our production assistant, Martin McLean, and D Minor at the controls. I'm Jeff Hayden. This is Your Legal Rights. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. You can call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.